This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It is 12:03, July 22nd, 2024. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for joining us for the Monday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Rachel Pearson, filling in for Rob Hart. Experts are weighing in on President Biden's big announcement yesterday and what it means for the Democratic Party as well as the DNC next month here in Chicago. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Tom Serafin, founder and CEO of Serafin and Associates here in Chicago. Tom, Democrats wasting no time here throwing their support behind Kamala Harris. Let's talk about why is it so important for the party to be united in this message so quickly?
They're out of time. Rachel, good afternoon. They're out of time. The last time this happened 56 years ago when a member of either party never went through the primary process was Hubert Humphrey when Lyndon Johnson retired because of the Vietnam War. But he retired in March. He left the presidency in March. He fulfilled his term, but he decided he wasn't going to run. Hubert Humphrey was left to run, and he did run, and he ran a pretty good campaign, fell about 10 days short, and lost to Richard Nixon, the Republican, in 1968 when the Democratic Convention was here in Chicago. History is repeating itself. 56 years later, the Democratic president decides not to run again, Mr. Joe Biden, and all of a sudden his vice president steps in, not having won a primary, but coming to Chicago for the Democratic convention. Wow.
I know. I think I keep likening it in my head to Roadrunner. You know, you run full speed, quick stop on a dime, and then pivot and do something else entirely. Like, yes. That's the Democratic Party right now. You mentioned, look, they're out of time, and I have to think time is the biggest obstacle between now and November.
It is. There's a faction of the party that will tell you they're in the honeymoon period now. You have 108 days, 28 days to the convention, 108 days to the election. So anything under 100 days, you know, when you come into office or you take an office, they call that a honeymoon period, the first couple, 2-3 months. So she's going to be in her honeymoon period. However, because of the condensed nature of this election, the Republicans and the people that are not wanting to see her get elected, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or whomever, they're going to come at her with everything and the kitchen sink immediately. It's tough. She's going to have to be very disciplined. She's going to have to get a real good staff. Her staff today that she has, it's not up at this level, but she's right there. I mean, she's right there if she can do this without making mistakes.
Well, and again, we're seeing Kamala Harris appear publicly today, you know, seeming very confident, and obviously she needs to do that. But what we're probably not seeing is all of the people running around behind the scenes with their hair on fire. I'm curious, Tom, does this, and if so, how does it change the Democratic Party's long-term plans if we're talking about the next 4, 8, 12 years? Because this is a big shift. Right.
Rachel, it changes everything. Every shift has changed everything. The assassination effort on Donald Trump changed everything. The fact that Mr. Biden's getting out of the race changes everything. And there's a lot of rumors out there that he might decide to step down from the presidency. So all of that is going on right now. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed and hold on.
Well, but what do we need to be watching for? If I'm one of the people behind the scenes here, obviously, you know, Biden putting his support behind Kamala Harris so quickly was a smart decision on that end. But there's still so many pieces left to fall into place. And the DNC is now less than a month away.
Well, yes. So the key is not to make any mistakes. She's got to win every day of the election. She's going to have to win every day. Every day. So if she doesn't lose a day, she's going to be in good shape. If she falters in the next few weeks, you know, on this campaign trail, there will be an open convention because they can't risk losing to Donald Trump. The Democratic Party is all in on this. Everybody, Obama, Clinton, they're all in on this, and they want to see a perfect campaign over the next 28 days.
Thanks so much for joining us. That's Tom Serafin. He's founder and CEO of Serafin & Associates here in Chicago. Now, coming up, we're going to look into the discussion on Biden's announcement and what it means specifically for Illinois Democrats.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
And we continue the discussion on President Biden's big weekend announcement. Joining us to talk about what it means for Illinois Democrats is Greg Hines, a columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. And Greg, we've now seen Governor Pritzker and U.S. Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth throw their support behind Kamala Harris, ending a little bit of speculation here since all three of them were relatively quiet yesterday.
Yeah, that's a lot of people are imputing some significance to that, and I think there may be some. Pritzker was never really in the mix for president. The party is uniting very quickly behind Kamala Harris, and while I agree with Tom Serafin that she's got to prove herself, I think the chances that she's not going to get the nomination now are nil. It could come even before the convention. They could do a virtual roll call where they call up everybody or do it by computer and get this done over the more quickly. There's a situation in Ohio that may force their hand a little bit. But I think the significance is whether Pritzker is interested in being vice president, being Ms. Harris's running mate, and the fact that he took his time to answer has kicked off an awful lot of speculation that is kind of confirmed by Pritzker's people close to the governor that he at least wants to be part of the conversation.
Well, listen, there was speculation that Pritzker was going to run for president, and he really didn't put those rumors to bed necessarily, just to say that, you know, he was focused on supporting Biden. And obviously it's good for anyone's political career to be in those sorts of talks. But I am curious, because we also heard from Tom Serafin earlier that this announcement really is shifting the political scene for Democrats today, 4 years down the road, 8 years down the road. And if we're talking about a potential running mate, is that something, is that the wagon that J.B. Pritzker wants to hitch to?
I think he at least wants to be discussed for the reasons you talked about. It raises national profile. It treats him as a serious contender. And he may actually be interested. There's some political reasons why Pritzker may want to make his move now rather than waiting 4 years or 8 years if he wasn't the vice president and Harris won. Presumably she'd run again in 4 years, which means his window would be 8 years down the road. That's a long time. Sometimes in politics, as Barack Obama proved, you need to make your move earlier than some people would think, because that's when the opportunity is, and this might be the opportunity for him.
Let's turn to the Democratic National Convention, obviously putting a unique focus on Illinois and its Democratic Party. How does President Biden's announcement change the trajectory of that event?
Oh, I think everything in American politics is completely different now. I mean, you keep having one thing after another that just stagger you. Your jaw drops. Oh, my goodness, what happened today? puts the Democrats, I think, back in the race, potentially. Harris is going to have to prove herself. But with Biden, I think there was an emerging consensus in the party that he was going to lose. He was going to lose badly. And now they have a fresh new face, one who's a prosecutor by training, who can really shift the discussion from, how old Mr. Biden is to, look at what this bright young woman, relatively, wants to do. Maybe we'll talk more about Mr. Trump's age, which has kind of disappeared from the conversation. He's almost as old as Mr. Biden is. All this suggests that the convention could be really interesting. It's going to be super interesting if they don't actually do the vote until the convention. I suspect they may do it beforehand, but at a minimum, this is an opportunity, will be an opportunity, the Democrats will take full advantage of it, to introduce Ms. Harris to the country. The average voter, person out in the street, doesn't know anything about Kamala Harris except she's vice president. This is their chance to tell America what she is, what she stands for, and how she's different from Trump. And all that will completely occupy the convention.
Thanks so much. Greg Hines, a columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Up next, Twisters has a big weekend at the box office.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, Twisters storms to a record debut at the box office, marking the biggest opening for a natural disaster film in North America. Many storm chasers saying it's actually pretty realistic. Joining us now with the details is Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company ComScore in Los Angeles. Paul, I have a very close friend who's a meteorologist and storm chaser, and he would not stop raving about this movie.
You know, it's really cool, Rachel, to see a movie like this coming in the wake of the original Twister movie from 1996. And for this film, and you're right, the special effects are incredible. And, you know, people are very interested in weather, because especially severe weather, because we can all relate to it. Everyone is, you know, a part of the ecosystem of the planet. But then also it can be entertaining when presented in this way. And if you think about it, you know, some of the greatest in-theater experiences have come from those disaster films, as they're called. I remember growing up as when I was a kid, the Irwin Allen, very famously, he was a film producer that made all these great so-called disaster movies. And this is just in that tradition, a great summer popcorn movie.
Yeah, because I'd rather watch a tornado on a big screen than in real life. Okay, I have storm chased. It's terrifying. Never again. Yeah. I will never. But here's the thing, and this is what I've heard from the meteorological storm chaser community, is that this film actually really does capture this sort of storm chaser community. And my friend even said, look, they were using the apps, they were using a lot of the websites that they use today. It was pretty accurate.
Yeah, and a lot of research goes into these movies, and I know that you know, those who are in the actual business of doing the storm chasing, they're going to be watching this very carefully. You don't want to lose street cred with them if you don't get it right in the movie. And we just got to give a shout out to Glenn Powell, who ever since Top Gun Maverick has become like a superstar, leading man, just the latest, greatest star, true movie star. And Daisy Edgar Jones is in the film as well. And just a knockout of a film, and overperformed at $80.5 million domestically this weekend, $107.6 million for the weekend globally. And it opened internationally ahead of its domestic debut. So the film is up to $123.2 million worldwide for Twisters. Pretty impressive.
I was going to say, I'm impressed by that, because that's, I mean, those numbers, you're talking like a Marvel franchise, something that has a lot of built up hype behind it. And this is a remake, sort of, which may be played into why so many people flocked to the theater to see it.
Yeah, the original film was so great. And you know, when I look at our ComScore data, that film opened back on May 10 of 1996 to $41 million, but went on to earn $242.3 million. That is almost six times multiple of that opening weekend. That's unheard of. But that was a different era when films open in many fewer theaters. Twister, the original, opened in about 2,414 locations, and the new film opened in 4,151 theaters. So big difference there, almost doubled the number of theaters. But what an impressive result. And Deadpool and Wolverine is on the way. Very exciting.
Thanks so much for joining us. Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst at ComScore in LA. Now, still ahead, Delta struggling to recover from some tech outages.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, good afternoon, and thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Rachel Pearson in for Rob Hart, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. In just a moment, we'll have a special report from CBS News on yesterday's change in the Democratic presidential ticket. Meantime, the director of the Secret Service claiming responsibility for the security failure at Trump's rally last weekend. And many businesses have gotten back on track, but Delta Airlines still struggling following last week's global internet outage. WBBM Business, the Dow is up 102 points, the NASDAQ up 257, the S&P 500, it's up 55 points. AccuWeather says we're watching for some thunder showers and spots. Much of the area, though, stays dry today with a high of 84 degrees. It'll settle in the mid-60s overnight. It's 77 degrees now in Chicago at 12:31.
News special report. Vice President Kamala Harris praised President Biden's accomplishments today from the White House.
In one term, he has already surpassed the legacy of most presidents who have served two terms in office.
Her comments coming about 24 hours after Biden dropped out of the presidential race. CBS's Ed O'Keefe is in Delaware now and says Biden's been out of sight since his COVID diagnosis.
There is a possibility that he might at some point try to venture out if he's feeling healthier. It is a windier and overcast day here on the beach, but for now, now we wait to hear from the president, who has said he plans to address the nation later this week.
Meantime, Harris now seeking support and a running mate. North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper on MSNBC.
The vice presidential conversation needs to occur later. I want to make sure that Kamala Harris wins. I'm going to work for her and do what I can to make sure we stop Donald Trump.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Monica Ricks.
Meantime, the director of the Secret Service, Kimberly Cheadle, now testifying on Capitol Hill about security failures at Donald Trump's rally.
As a director of the United States Secret Service, I take full responsibility for any security lapse of our agency. We are fully cooperating with ongoing investigations. We must learn what happened, and I will move heaven and earth to ensure that an incident like July 13th does not happen again.
That incident resulting in an attempted assassination of former President Donald Trump. Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer now calling on Cheadle to resign.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, stocks are trading sharply higher today. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Economics in Albany, New York. Hugh, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, I think it's a real positive day, obviously. I think the principal reason for it is not so much what's been going on politically, but I think everybody knows that we've seen really good inflation numbers recently, consumer prices being up only, being actually down 0.1%, excluding the food and energy up 0.1% for the month of June. And the expectation is when this Friday, when we see the very important personal consumption expenditure price index, you're going to see more of the same good inflation numbers. And that sort of points to the fact that the Federal Reserve is likely to lower interest rates, let's say September or December, or maybe both September and December. But anyway, lower interest rates, and that's increasing or improving prospects for the economy. I think that's the principal reason. It's not that we're ignoring what's going on politically. It's that I think Wall Street has been pretty much inspired by the good inflation news, and I might add also good economic news that suggests that the economy in the second quarter, and we'll see news on that this week, the economy did fairly well in the second quarter, did better than the first quarter. So really, prospects for the economy, prospects for inflation are helping Wall Street have a lot more confidence in what lies ahead. Good news.
Yeah, and leading the markets today is tech. And I'm curious to sort of pick your brain on that, because we obviously had that massive outage last week and sort of rebounding from that. Is that what we're seeing? And does that then continue? And how does that weigh in when we're talking about the Fed potentially cutting interest rates?
Well, the tech glitch that we had, and I call it a glitch, I hope it's a glitch, that we had last week, I don't think impacted the market nearly as much as the fact that there's been a deep concern about the so-called Magnificent Seven, which includes NVIDIA, Microsoft, Apple, and a number of other companies, which have been doing very well and have reached levels, at least last week, it was thought or concluded that it reached levels that were pricey or overvalued. So the market broadened out a little bit last week, went away from those technologies shares, the so-called Magnificent Seven, and broadened out. You even saw small capitalization stocks over the course of the last two or three weeks start to do better, and they've been missing from this so-called bull market. But now we're getting back to where we were before with very, very high growth, very, very positive so-called Magnificent Seven or technology stocks outperforming the broader market. But everything is moving a little bit better today. Sort of newfound confidence, And again, I think that confidence, newfound confidence, really goes back to those good inflation numbers, good economic numbers, prospects for a cut in interest rates by the Federal Reserve sometime September, December, or both September and December, four times in 2025, cut interest rates, prospects for the economy and earnings get all that much better as a result of that.
Now, Hugh, you're sharing a lot of positive aspects here heading into the back half of 2024, but what would you say is the biggest threat to financial markets right now?
Yeah, I think that we could be wrong on the economy, and that's certainly a threat. When you take a look at index of leading economic indicators, and I underline the word leading, they've been down for 27 of 28 months successively and tend to point to a slowdown or maybe a weakening, a softening in the economy. That's a big risk. I think the other big risk is that we could be wrong on the inflation numbers, that when we get to the end of the year, and I mean, and I'm talking November, December, and start of next year, 2025, we might see a turn a little bit higher, or that inflation might start to do a little bit better, in the sense that it might get a little bit higher, and that will mean that the Federal Reserve will not reduce interest rates as much in 2025 as we are currently forecasting or pricing into the market. So I think the risk of inflation turning higher, the risk that the economy doesn't do quite as well, are certainly substantial risks, and you got to watch those numbers very carefully. Right now, things look pretty good, but again, watch those numbers very carefully. They can turn on us and make things a little bit gloomier, and then we're seeing a Federal Reserve that'll say, we're going to keep interest rates higher for longer. I don't think that's going to be the outcome, but nevertheless, that is a risk.
That's the cautiously optimistic Hugh Johnson. Thanks so much for joining us. Hugh is Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Economics in New York. Coming up, why is Delta Airlines still struggling from last week's tech glitch?
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, Delta Airlines is still trying to get back on track from last week's major tech outage, while its competitors seem to have recovered. Joining us to discuss why Delta's alone in this endeavor is Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher at JoeSendMe.com in New York. And Joe, we know that this outage from last week impacted just about every aspect of travel, of government operations. But when we're talking about airlines, what all needs to go into recovering, and why specifically Delta still seeing hundreds of cancellations here?
Well, hello, Rachel. The problem with Delta has nothing to do with CrowdStrike now. All airlines have something called a scheduling system where the pilots and the flight attendants can either call in or go online and get their assignments. After Friday, when all of the airlines, except weirdly Southwest, because their systems are so archaic, were affected, that's true. Southwest is running on very old computer software that did not get affected.
And they say, look who's laughing now. Right. Yeah.
Well, they had the meltdown in 2002, so they've got nothing to crow about. But American got back on schedule very quickly. United, not as quickly, but they're fine now. Delta's problem is strictly internal. The pilots and the flight attendants cannot reach Delta to find out where to go. So if you don't know where your pilots are and you don't know where your flight attendants are, your planes sit on the ground and your customers stew and get unhappy.
So what's the fix? And if it's not related to CrowdStrike, then what can we attribute this to?
Well, as I say, this is an internal Delta software matter. How we get the fix is Delta has the reputation, much deserved, admittedly in Chicagoland, you don't see it as much because they're not a big player in Chicago, of incredible arrogance. They keep trying to tell people they're a premium airline. And the problem is they've drunk their own Kool-Aid. So as things go wrong, they don't pay attention. Oh, it must have been CrowdStrike. And now in day four, we're seeing the downside of this. The only thing that probably will work is that Delta will have to do what Southwest did back in 2002, right around Christmas, which is literally put most of their flights on the ground, restructure the whole network. They've been unwilling to do that because that's a big one-time hit, but they're now taking daily hits. They're canceling more flights per day now than they were on Friday.
Well, and that's just it, is at some point you got to bite the bullet and take the loss and reset and move on, because, you know, we're hearing that, I mean, in addition to cancellations, now we're having vouchers. Like, you just, there's so much customer service that has to go into this and making sure that people either get to where they need to go or, you know, don't just burn the bridge of your airline entirely.
Well, to put it in Chicago terms, Delta right now is the Chicago Bulls after Michael Jordan. They don't seem to understand they can't just plug something else in. They have to rebuild from scratch. And that they've so far been too arrogant or too frightened to do. And as far as I know, today is bad. Tomorrow will be bad because today is bad. The airlines things tend to, you know, unravel and cocoon, and you can't get out of your own way. Right now, we're still hearing from pilots and flight attendants saying they can't reach Delta to get an assignment. So everything is on the ground.
Well, and I think, too, from the consumer standpoint, if you're looking to book a flight, I doubt that you would pick Delta knowing what's going on now. So this is a company that's going to feel the effects for some time to come, even if the unlikely event they get it together in the next, you know, day or two here.
Well, yes. If you're in Atlanta, for example, where they have their worldwide hub, or Detroit, where they're the big player, or Minneapolis, where they're the big player, you may not have a choice but to fly Delta, no matter how bad or how good it is. Thankfully, in Chicago, you can fly United or American out of O'Hare or Southwest out of Midway. You'll get anywhere you need to go, and things are better. The only thing I can tell customers right now is what I told the readers of my website 2 o'clock a.m. Eastern time this morning. Do not book Delta this week.
Thanks so much, Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher at joesentme.com in New York. Now, you can join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday. And still to come, we'll get a pair of investment ideas from a real money pro.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday. This afternoon, we welcome Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Michael, glad to have you with us again. What's your first pick?
First pick is Google, and Rachel, thanks a lot for having me on again. I have picked these before on your show, but many months ago, and the reason why I picked the two I have is they have pulled back a little bit, and even though they're much higher than when I originally recommended them, they've pulled back enough where I think this is another good entry point for investors. So Google is my first pick. You got a 23 forward PE. It's a great AI play. I think eventually you'll see that Google uses AI probably better than any company in the world. And so the AI play is there, but it also has a huge moat, meaning it's got a very protected business in search. And when we look at tech companies to invest in, the two things we look at is the protection, the moat that they have created, or a technology that's groundbreaking and speaks to a huge audience, and that is Google's AI part. So in a rare instance here, you got a company that has both already a huge moat and also growth potential in a technology that is pretty groundbreaking. So we love the stock. Again, you don't get a lot of stocks like Google trading at 23 forward PE with still growing in double digits. So it's a buy right here. I think you could easily get a move to 250 in the next 18 months, and that is about a 30% gain from where it is right now.
Now, Michael, before we go on to your second pick, just a note for our listeners, because Google has two types of shares, right? There's G-O-O-G-L, and then there's G-O-O-G. What's the difference between the two? Which do you prefer?
Great, great question. So, yeah, I mean, that could confuse investors. Some of these stocks are that way, where they break out the voting shares and the non-voting. So Goog, G-O-O-G, is the alphabet share class C, which does not have voting shares. G-O-O-G-L is their class A shares that have voting rights. And we own the voting rights one, the G-O-O-G-L, for a couple reasons. And voting rights, that's nice. If you have enough stock, it actually matters. Even if you don't, though, the stock trades at a discount to the non-voting shares right now. So why have the non-voting at a higher price than the voting? So if investors want to buy Google, I would buy the G-O-O-G-L, which is the Class A voting shares.
Perfect. And then, Michael, your second pick today.
Second pick is Uber. We have pounded the table on Uber a few times. I originally advocated in the low 30s. Stocks in the 60s now. Why would I still advocate it? Because it was 80 and it's pulled back 20%. We still love it, and I think it's a great entry point here. It's another stock that has a gigantic moat, a great competitive position, and I think that it's very much underappreciated, the pricing power that Uber has. And so you got a stock that, again, is growing, you know, solid double digits, and the forward P is 40. That's more of a normal PE for a company growing like this. It's what made Google so cheap. But I just think that this stock is going to grow so fast that the forward PE is going to drop to around 20 in the next few years. And you know, you just, it is cheap still. Their pricing power is much better than I think what analysts and investors appreciate. So I would go with Uber. I think it could easily make a run to 100, which is about a 50% gain in the next 18 months. And it's another great pick.
Thanks so much for joining us. Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital here in Chicago.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.